So, I'd like to talk tonight about something that's very pervasive in spiritual practice and very elusive. This thing we call equanimity. And I'd like to start with a koan from the Blue Cliff Record. It's a little koan. About Master Yuen Men. It says, Yuen Men said, and he's saying this to his monks, I don't ask you about before the 15th day of the month. Try to say something about after the 15th day. And what he's saying is, the 15th day of the month was traditionally in the Chinese calendar the full moon. And so he's saying, and the full moon is a symbol for enlightenment. He's saying, what's it like, not before enlightenment, but after enlightenment? And then Yuen Men answers his own question. He answers for everyone. He says, every day is a good day. So he's saying, enlightened, not enlightened, every day is a good day. And I think I came to Zen in part because I had this idea that if I just practiced hard enough, every day would be a good day. It hasn't worked out that way. In fact, not at all. In fact, I've been doing this practice now for many years, and there are days when I feel like the star of a bad Woody Allen movie, just buffeted by neurotic fears and all kinds of passions, and not at all my idea of what the person of Zen arrives at. And in fact, it's very much in the culture. I mean, many of you who have been on retreats, when you come back, people will ask you, oh, was it really relaxing? The idea is that if we do this practice, we will relax. And my experience of practice, whether it's 25 minutes on the cushion or 7 days on the cushion, is that it's a roller coaster. I'm filled with joy and longing and fear and anger about some of the most trivial things. And the culture talks about being very Zen about things. You've probably heard that colloquial expression. I have no idea what it could possibly mean to be very Zen about things, but I think the slang is that it means you're infinitely chill about whatever it is you're talking about. And what I've come to realize is that this yearning of mine to not be buffeted by waves of feeling and thoughts that don't seem like they'll ever stop, and certainly that I can't control, that's something I really aspire to end. Please, not one more emotional roller coaster on the cushion. And I would imagine that the people who had been doing this practice a lot longer than I have, they would have gotten there. So I would go into my teachers and ask about it, and they would just laugh. Sometimes one of the teachers would talk about being in a hell realm, and I would go, you really? Really? There are days when you just feel horrible and you can't stand it? And I would feel this mix of disappointment and relief. The disappointment because I really want there to be somebody who's got it all worked out, who's finally arrived, who's finally not subject to all the ups and downs of being a human being. And of course it's a relief, because when I hold out that ideal, I am just one constant mistake and failure, because I'm certainly not living that way. But then we get even some of the things in our liturgy book that suggest that we should get to be on this elevated plane of equanimity. In the heart of true and trusting, I decided not to have us all read it tonight because it's very long, but I'll just read you the beginning. It says, "The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. When preferences are all seen through, the way stands clear and undisguised. But even slight distinctions made set earth and heaven far apart." So what do I do if I'm filled with preferences? Setting them aside just doesn't seem to be an option. My job at a conference, there was a conference of meditation teachers and psychoanalysts a couple of weeks ago. And my job was to speak about equanimity. And there was a teacher from another tradition who said that there are fully enlightened people who reach this plane of equanimity and never look back. So one of the other meditation teachers asked if he had ever met a person like this, and he said, no, not yet. There's nothing wrong with this yearning to finally reach a plane where it's all good, it's all chill. Accept that. It becomes an ideal to which we compare ourselves and constantly fail. It can also become a role that we try to take on, and we see this in spiritual practice, where someone feels that they have to suppress whatever feelings arise. They have to be zen. They have to be chill. And so what you see are people who exhibit what we sometimes call zen sickness, where everything has to be pushed down. Everything has to be pushed away, and there is this kind of bland sweetness, if you will, or blankness. Some people stay stuck in this for years at a time. Another danger is apathy. Because if there are no passions, then there's nothing to do. So, when there are atrocities in the Middle East, it's just karma playing itself out. Nothing to do. When there's terrible injustice in our own cities, nothing to do. When the world is burning up with global warming, nothing to do. And that's another major criticism of the downside, the shadow side of equanimity. So what is equanimity? If it's not any of these things, if it's not suppressing everything, if it's not apathy, well, really, equanimity is not a place that we arrive at, but an activity. It's being present for everything that arises, everything included, everything faced toward. So in the same day, the joy of walking in the woods and the heartbreak of a friend's cancer diagnosis, all of it included, all of it faced toward. And what that means is, rather than less feeling, less passion. For most of us, more passion, more of a sense of aliveness. That really, equanimity is presence for all of it. And in that way, feeling much, much more vividly the arising and falling away of all the miraculous and horrible and joyful aspects of being human. But is that it? Do we just get buffeted around on one big roller coaster? Well, what practice does is it strengthens our ability not just to be present for all of it, but to hold ourselves, to take care of ourselves, to find those aspects of ourselves that are not anxious or rageful or lustful, and to find that one who can take care of the one who is caught in pain and suffering. And that we do more and more with practice, so that we're not only more present to the aliveness, and if anything, feeling more and experiencing life more vividly, but we're able to sit with it. That allows us not to just sit, but to move forward more skillfully when it's action that's called for. To do our best to end atrocities or injustices, or reach out to the person who clearly needs our help right in front of us. Not to be swept away by all this aliveness, but to be able to see more and more clearly what's needed in the face of so much suffering in the world and in ourselves. So I think I know what Yunmen means. That from the point of view of aliveness, every day really is a good day. And that's what we affirm on the cushion every time we sit. So, I'll also just say one more thing. At this conference, I was trying to share a chair with Josh Bartok, and it was a chair on rollers, and the chair went out from under us both, and I fell on my butt in front of all these teachers. Just after I had spoken about equanimity. So, comments? Reactions, complaints.
So I was, as you were talking, I was just thinking about that word equanimity, you know, and it's like magnanimity, you know, so anima is soul, so magnanimity is being great soul. So equanimity, like being equal souled or even, and we want to think that this is a quality of inner experience, right? That like we're the ultimate Libra,
right?
Have this inner balance that can't be shaken. And what you're saying, which I find really helpful, is it's not that at all, but it's meeting everything with that equal spirit. So I find that I can, you know, that it gives it a better meaning for me now, that to meet everything with the same soul, which doesn't mean some things won't make us cry and some things won't make us happy and some things won't bore us to tears.
Yeah,
we're meeting them all with that same intimacy, that same that this is me, you know, opening the heart.
Right.
So thank you, Bob.
Yeah, exactly. And nothing prioritized. Nothing's better than anything else. Nothing. I mean, we have preferences. I like chocolate ice cream a lot better than vanilla. But that's not the same as gotta push away that fear, that pain.
How do you get unstuck?
Yeah, so say a little more. Say a little more.
Since I started practicing Zen, or a little bit into it, a bunch of stuff happened, but I started getting very stoic about things, which put another way is like the Zen sickness, or like equanimity that we don't want, necessarily. And how do you... I suppose there's no like step-by-step guide to not having that, but...
Well, but, you know, the best thing about this practice is it always just comes back to the present moment. That all you have to do is watch. You know, you may begin to catch glimmers of things that are just getting shoved away, right? And sometimes we can't let it all in. So sometimes there's pain or there's suffering in some way that's just too much, and so we do need to keep it at bay for a while, but gradually you may notice that more of what's being pushed away can be let in gently, gradually. And so, but it's all right in this moment.
I remember on Sashin it started to wane, or things started to sort of fall away.
And that's actually the more intensive practice allows us to let more in and let some of the controls loosen a little bit. So it's designed for that, actually, both the all-day sits and the sashin.
Thank you for the talk. I'm thinking about this just in terms of motion, I guess, maybe metaphorical motion, but in thinking about equanimity and reactivity, reacting.
Yeah.
And that going with the reaction to something that I've reacted to a lot of times before, it's kind of just like riding it. So in a way, it's not that active. I'm just kind of riding into the anger, into the action, into the nasty statement. And sometimes I see that and don't do it. And that, to me, is my equanimity.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of back here motionless, not motionless, but not moving with the reactive emotion as much. So I'm kind of staying in place, but it takes more energy to do that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of active way to not move with some negative impulses, not because of repression, but just because I'm more watching it than riding.
But then do you find, so sometimes you're sitting there and you're angry and so, you know, something's happening, but then do you find if you don't just discharge it, that you're able to watch what needs to be dealt with? Because anger can be a really important signal, right? That something needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So anger isn't bad, right? Do you find that sometimes that delay allows you then to move more skillfully into it, into what's happening?
Yes, but moving into it sometimes looks like I see it walking away or running away or whatever.
I'm reminded of when the live TV ended, when people used to make these terrible gaffes on television to millions of people, and then they invented the 7-second delay, where everything is broadcast 7 seconds later than it really happens in the studio, so that if something really bad is about to come across the airways, they stop it. And I think of one of the things that we end up doing, not because we try to do it, but just because of practice, is helping with that kind of ability to just sit with momentarily something before we dive in. A lot of profanity was prevented from going out on the airways.
You talked about that. This feels so great, and I wanna be in this peaceful state. And so you sort of get attached to that a little bit. I never thought that, you know, when you first start sitting, that the last thing you imagine is that you look forward to crossing your legs and sitting. You just, it's terribly uncomfortable and scary and everything. And now it's like, oh, this is, I want to feel this all day long. So it's interesting to watch like what's happening during the day and how you begin to use the practice in reaction to things that happen. Mm-hmm. And I love that thing about the it's actually, I think, 3 second delay.
Is it just 3 seconds?
I think it's 3 second delay. I think, oh, I should do that all the time. And a little of that happened tonight with an exchange with my husband, and I was so taken back that I didn't have that, you know, instant response. So I was like taking that 3 second delay, and it was so much more clear like what was happening. And it sort of like stopped, you know. It didn't travel. That exchange didn't, it was really so clear and so honest, and then it ended. Wanted to share that. It just, there's a lot of, I wish I could just share the whole thing over again so I could highlight those things. Thank you very much.
You know, I think we forget how radical it is, this doing nothing, this non-reacting, and how transformative it can be.
I was thinking, it's like when you first start using email, you don't know yet that you shouldn't press it.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and it's as though Zen gives us, our Zen practice gives us this ability not to press send right away. With even in, you know, in conversation and in our daily, you know, our moment-to-moment lives, you've got just that ability to pull your thumb back for a second and think, do I really want to press send? And sometimes you do. You know, like even having with getting, do I really want to get really angry and yell? Sometimes that's, you know, we take that moment and,
yes,
that is the right thing.
Great.
But not always.
Great.
Great. It's funny, it makes you, I find myself sometimes saying, you know, you're being a jerk. and you're still doing it, and you say, yeah, I'm a jerk, you know. But you have that realization that, you are, and you did it, and you know you're feeling that way, but, you know, at least you have the realization.
Well, and you know, just the attention, just watching it, just seeing it, even if you're being the jerk right then, is transformative in enough. That's what we keep talking about, shining awareness on what we do while we do it, is it has its own transformative properties. Yeah, Holly.
Well, something that has kind of happened to me since I started practicing Zen is that I actually started crying a lot more. And at first, I thought something was wrong, and I was like, oh, no, this isn't what should be happening with them. It's like,
Yeah. That's, you know, it's so important because a lot of people find that they're feeling more when they start practice, and they expect it's going to be the reverse. But this is really just opening yourself to more and more of the aliveness of the moment.
Go back to the subject of preference. When I was in school, a couple of times we were given tests of aptitudes and preferences, and there would be all these situations, and you would get to say, I would like this the best, and I would like this the least. And one of the things in every list was read to a sick person, or take an invalid to the library or something. I always put that last. That was not what I wanted to do. I have had the opportunity to take care of several people who had physical problems, and they have not survived. And you think a lot, I just wish I had another chance. I wish I could do more. And recently I've learned that a person in our family has a chronic illness. And I thought, here it comes again. And then something right up here said, look here, you got another chance.
Wow. And it's facing toward, right? It's facing toward something that's really hard.
Page 60.